Welcome to What the Hex, your source for Warhammer Underworlds in some time that includes the number of minutes equal to 30. Tonight, I'm coming to you. I'm Davey, and with me is
Phil.
And we got a guest with us today. We got Steven Van of the Call It Shadespire blog coming in to give us some of his expertise on our particular particular subject today. So, Steven, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good, man. Having a good night.
Yeah, good. And I'm not saying this just to butter you up as the guest, but I will say Call It Shadespire is the my favorite blog out there right now. And I'm going to tell you why, because it's not just not just blowing smoke. I like that you're doing something that no one else is doing. So if you are a listener and you have not checked this out yet, Steven each week will pick a card or a board, or you know, you've got the several different subjects, or a bottom deck, like a bad card, and do a real deep dive into that. And that's a pretty fun thing. We have a lot of folks that are writing about, here's the latest banned and restricted list, and that's all interesting. But sometimes you've read it more again. This is somewhere I can go where I'm not reading the same thing I've read somewhere else. So, yeah, awesome work on that. Appreciate you putting that content out there in the world for everybody.
Hey, man, I appreciate that. I saw that there were a lot of blogs when I started writing and was looking to do something a little different. And some friends and I came up with this kind of single aspect concept. So that's what we're doing.
Yeah. Now, did you get started with Underworlds right out of the gate, or were you?
No, we started about July of last year, just about a month before Gen Con. Okay. We decided to not play Legend of the Five Rings at Gen Con and instead play Shadespire. So,
all right. If people want to hear about your LVO experience, they can go read it on your blog, and also listen. You guessed it, in on Battle for Salvation podcast to talk with them about Molags, which was a cool episode. I recommend people go check it out, and you talk a little bit on your blog as well about the tournament format. But I will say you went undefeated and came in third there. Spoiler alerts, but so a really awesome showing with the Gits, and so we've got a lot of good stuff to share. We're not going to touch a ton on that. Why don't we, before we get started, I always like to say thanks to the folks who've commented or left reviews. You can get in touch with us at WTHcast on Twitter. In the meantime, let's talk about what you've been doing lately. I kind of talked to some of your big things, highlights, but what have you been up to lately in the hobby, Steven?
Yeah, so I put out a new article today on the new board packs, which I find really interesting. I think they're both going to find a really solid niche in the current play style, and we'll see what else comes out with elves and robo dwarves or whatever they are. And then we did start our 8-game tournament series in my local card shop this weekend, and had our first run, and Molags won, and so I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do about that.
Okay, so like 8-game tournament series, like you play one game over the weekend, or you play four of them the next four the next weekend, or how's that work?
No, I probably am messing up the technical terms for it. We're playing 8 tournaments and treating them as a series for one Shade Glass.
All right, cool. Wow, that
sounds great.
Yeah, it sounds really awesome.
I wish we had that.
How close do we get here, Phil? What have you been up to?
I've been working on Magors, as I've been saying the last couple episodes. Sort of decided on them to bring to Akon, so I've been practicing and sort of refining my deck. And as part of that, this last weekend, you and me, we went down to Rockford, Illinois to participate in a bi-weekly tournament that Cataclysm Games has. Although I wouldn't exactly call it a tournament this time around. There was only 4 of us. Yeah. So just some fun games. Played against the old Molly G, yeah, getting smacked around by him a little bit more. And some fun games against the Gits, which was good because I hadn't played them yet with Magors.
Yeah, that's definitely a matchup you want to have some reps in for there. So I went down with you there, and it was I did not realize they were doing it every 2 weeks. So it makes more sense that they didn't have, you know, a ton of folks out necessarily every time. But yeah, it was good to play some people we hadn't played before. I brought down Godsworn Hunt as part of my duty to this podcast of researching some of the war bands out there. But I actually had a ton of fun. I managed to get Molog's 2-1 and then was beaten up on the goblins. He's just having some pretty terrible dice. So that was going 2-0. And then you and I played kind of a final cap of a game, which was gloriously won by Jagatha, not with her javelin, but it was just her and Magor left. Magor had like, he needed three to drop him.
He had three left, yeah. But he also had the upgrade to reduce his damage by one. So you needed to hit him for four. Visage.
Yeah. And so, and I think you specifically said, I'm looking at my power cards trying to figure out what to do. And you said, I don't think there's any way you can kill him. I was like, well, there might be. And so I dropped Great Strength and Concealed Weapon and ran up and used her Dark Oath knife to roll the crit and tie it at 17. And then one of the warbands was wiped out, so I won it on the tiebreak. So that was how I expect every Godsworn game to go, is win it with Jagathra's knife. So, but Godsworn is a topic for another time. Tonight we're talking about power deck size. And I feel like this was a topic to cover because there's a lot of decisions people make instinctually on this, but there's a little bit of math behind it, and that's what I've appreciated about Steven's blog, is that he'll break down the math on some of the cards where appropriate and say, like, you know, here's objectively why this is a good or bad idea. So we're going to cover like our own habits, our own tendencies with this, some of the considerations when you're deciding how many cards to include in your power deck, and then any cards you might want to consider specifically that kind of manipulate the deck itself. So we're going to kick it off. Let's talk about our own habits. So when you build a deck, Steven, I know a little bit about this because as I was talking about before the podcast, I literally stole your deck and used it at our local, and I know it included, I'm pretty sure it included 20 power cards. Is that what you stick with usually?
Yeah, I won't go above 20, particularly in this game. Now, if a game gives me a reason to, I mean, I have in the past, the one that I reference a lot is I used to play competitive Legend of the Five Rings. There was a card called Coastal Lane that was really good, but the downside of it was that you had to include two extra cards in your deck. Mm-hmm. So, like, if the game gave us an incentive to do something like that, I would consider it. But at this point, I just play 20.
Okay, Phil, what about you when you're building a deck? Where do you sit at?
I generally try to be at 20 because there's a part of me that knows that it gives me a better chance of drawing what I want. Mm-hmm. Although I think we'll see when we break this down that maybe it's not as significant as people maybe think it is, but either way, I try to stay to 20, although just to try it out, I did include a few cards in my Reavers or my Magoris deck this past weekend to bump it up to 24 just to see how it went, and it actually worked out pretty well, so some surprises there.
Sure.
Might give it a few more runs just to see if it was a fluke or if it's actually not that big a deal.
I myself have almost always gone 20. Sometimes when I'm first trying a deck out, it'll be at 22 just because I don't have the guts to make the difficult decision to trim it down. But also part of it is because I made the terrible decision early on to get the faction-specific card sleeves, and you only get 20 of those in the pack. So if you're going to have all the bling, then you got to get yourself down to 20. So I've been doing that a lot. But I think it's worth noting, and I kind of brought this topic up in a couple of places, like some of the other players, John Reese, Jay Clare, they've been winning grand clashes with 22 card decks in John Reese's case and 24 for Jay Clare. So there's people who are finding success with it. And then a real outlier, Claim the City, and I don't know if you've listened to them, Steven, but it was a while back. This is probably an older episode. They were talking about Reaver decks, and we're suggesting, hey, like, Reavers have this flexible build style possible, and you take these cards that draw extra ones, and you mulligan for the style that you want. So they were saying they had the player in their local that was playing with 30 cards and just, you know, being aggressive about the mulligan to match the strategy. You know, this is earlier on. I think maybe some of the styles were not quite as refined as they were. So I think it was maybe more possible. But so that's some of what's floating out there. Now let's talk about when you're making the deck, like what considerations, like when you talk about what you know, what we've been doing, like how we get to that, or, you know, in my case, if you're just doing it kind of, cause I see other people doing it, what should I be thinking about? So there's a few things, there's a possibility of, drawing all upgrades. There's some math on that. And I talked to Steven early about this and he says, oh, well, it's pretty easy, really. It's just a hypogeometric, calculation. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go look that word up as soon as we're off this chat and find that. so, do you want to talk a little bit about that, Steven, or?
Sure. I mean, I don't have a real deep knowledge of it. But it's a calculation that's used to determine, the likelihood of a specific event without replacement. So like drawing a card from a deck of cards, you don't put it back after you draw it.
Right.
So in order to determine some things about the likelihood of something happening, you use this particular kind of distribution based on essentially four numbers: the number of cards in your deck, the number of cards you're drawing, and the number of successes, and something else that I can't remember off the top of my head. But you put them into a calculator called a hypergeometric distribution calculator, and it'll give you the percentage chance of a specific thing happening. Oh, yeah. I remember the fourth thing. It's how many successes in the number of cards that you draw.
Right.
So, like, what are the chances I'll draw, if you're playing Magic, two of this card in my first hand?
Sure. And for our cases, you can use this if you hop on here and say, hey, I've built a deck, and it totally hinges around, like you said, I need two of these, or let's say I think that to run my God's Warner, I absolutely need, I need Spoils of War or Ghoulish Pack to pop up. You know, it may or may not be the case, but if I think that, I could say, hey, there's only two successes in this whole sample and I need one of them to show up. You can punch that sort of thing into this calculator. Is that a correct understanding?
Yeah, absolutely. An example that I use when I'm kind of explaining it to our playgroup locally here is, if you're playing Ploymaster and you want to know how much it like hurts you to start putting in spells in terms of being able to score Ploymaster, you can put that in and say, oh, well, now I'm only playing 8 ploys instead of 10. What are my chances of being able to score Ploymaster on the first turn?
Okay.
Stuff like that.
Perfect. Yeah. Let's see. So one basic thing, and I found one of these calculators and muddled around with it. One thing I was looking at was, okay, let's consider what is the impact. Like, as the deck gets bigger, in my, you know, instinctually, I'm like, well, a bigger deck increases the chances that I'm going to get 5 upgrades or an opening hand with 4 upgrades, which is normally something that less than ideal. You're going to mulligan away, unless there's something really weird going on. So I punched up some math using this calculator to see what the odds of drawing 4 or more upgrades in your first hand is. In a 20 card deck, I came up with 15.2%. So 1 in 6-ish, that you're going to come up with a hand that you're going to mulligan, throw a bunch of stuff away, and then be low on. I started marching it up like 22 cards and 24 cards, and I found like it moved so little, right? I found with a 24 card deck, it just increased by 0.6%. So the chance of 4 or more upgrades was 15.8%. Like, I don't know, basically not a big deal. So if you're looking at only from a perspective of I'm worried about getting these upgrades, or too many upgrades, then that should maybe not be such a big driver. Although I say that, you know, looking at it, 0.6% seems pretty small, but I guess any tweak on the percentages is something, right? But all the way up to that 30 card deck, it looked like 16.5% was your chance of drawing 4 or more upgrades in the open. So like even a dramatically bigger deck doesn't seem to move the needle all that much. But as we'll get into later, you know, that's only one way to look at it, right? I think.
And
go ahead.
I would say, you know, just as like a caution on ignoring little percentages, the rake, the house advantage on a Vegas blackjack table is about 0.28%. So like 0.28 of a percent. And those places make billions of dollars because the small advantage multiplied over multiple games
sure
comes out to be big.
Right. Yeah. And so I guess you, when you consider that, let's say in, well, like the Grand Clash, you're playing 8 games, you know, even small percentages magnify over 8 games. And that's if you won them all 2-0. In the case of, I don't know, your gets, you went 3 games every time, right? So you're talking...
I did.
Yeah, you're talking 12 games. So, yeah, that's a good point. Embarrassingly, I also started to put in, what happens, what are my odds of getting, like, how do the odds change of getting 3 or more upgrades? It's literally 50% every time, because that's how math works, so...
That's the top of the arc that the hypergeometric distribution draws.
Yeah.
It's right there at the same.
Yeah. I was thinking like, oh yeah, because that's always the hard hand to figure out if I'm going to mulligan is when I got 3 upgrades and two ploys. So let me check the odds on that. And I'm like, oh, I must be putting something wrong. It's coming out the same all the time. Like, no, I just didn't think about it very well. So, all right. Yeah. So we're talking just the upgrades here. So, I think we jump to diluting your strategy right here. And this is one that would get me. Go ahead.
Can I add one more thing about upgrades?
Please do. Please do.
To get a little deeper into that, the mathematical aspect of it, cause that's kind of what I do.
Yeah.
So you get 4 plus upgrades, right? You mulligan them away. Mm-hmm. Is everybody pretty much agreed on that?
Yes. Yeah.
Unless I drew Ghoulish Pact and Spoils of War. Yeah.
What
I found really like where it shows that this larger deck size can really mess with you is post mulligan. So your chances of drawing 4 or more upgrades on your second hand, if you've thrown away one that had 4 upgrades, they go up pretty drastically, from about 1 in 25 games in a 20 card deck to about, doing some math in my head here, to about 1 in 14 games in a 24 card deck.
Okay. Wow. That's pretty dramatic.
Yeah. You'll get that double mulligan where you get garbage. And since they just clarified in the FAQ that you can't mulligan more than once, that's pretty rough.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. And mulligans are the other side of that they clarified was, having to do it at the same time as your objectives, which, you know, some people took as a given and some people didn't, but either way, the mulligan got a little riskier, I'd say. So,
well, it's always possible to have success with a bigger deck, and I would never tell anybody that it's not. Like, that's obviously a possibility. I think what it does is it puts you in a situation where your bad turns get a lot worse.
Sure.
And you know, some people are willing to accept that in order to gain other advantages like versatility, mm-hmm. And some aren't.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
So we'll get into some of these other cards in a bit, like Duel of Wits and Trust, like that pull through your deck a lot more. I'd say another one is how bad is it if you run out of cards, right? So if you are a deck that is including things like Duel of Wits or Improvisation, or you are playing like, you know, one of the Stormcast Warbands, you know, for me, when I'd play them, I'd frequently be drawing cards. You know, there's other war bands that do that a lot. Draw a power card to delay a little bit, and activate up. More likely that you're going to burn through your deck, especially if you've got cards that can be kind of played no matter what, not that need to be held. And in fact, that did happen to me. Like, again, I'm talking about stealing your Gitz deck with between Improvisation and burning through cards. I got to the third round and only had 3 power cards left to draw because I'd raced through them all. I think I had to mulligan the first one. So how bad is that in your guys' opinion here? I guess Steven will throw to you first.
It happened to me a couple of times at LVO, where I never draw a card in that deck as an activation, so it only happened when I mulliganed. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's pretty rough. I don't like the feeling, but I think in the case of my deck in particular, I'm willing to accept that. I love improvisation. I think it's probably one of my favorite cards in the game. And I just know that it occasionally is going to result in me drawing out.
Sure. And I guess the counter argument I see is that, you know, like you said, it's only happening when you mulligan in that particular kind of deck. But let's say even if you have mulligan and then you draw out, that last round is a little rougher, but if you've been able to use all those cards up until then you've gotten pretty good utility, like it theoretically, unless you've been having to throw a bunch out at the end of in the end phases. But I will agree with you. I had not included improvisation until I was using that deck, and I think the two times I dropped it, I was like, oh, this is amazing. Like, it just refreshed my hand, burned through everything. It's like having a much bigger power hand in the rounds that really need it. And Phil, you got to drop it a couple times this past weekend, right?
Yeah, I did.
Did you ever draw through your whole deck this weekend?
I got close in our game. I got down to just two cards left. But in that game, I also got to play to the victor, the spoils. Mm. So I got to draw an additional three off of a kill. So with the six extra draws in the game, I almost ran out of cards.
And this was, how many did you have
on the weekend? This was with a 24-card deck.
Yeah. So if you'd been down at 20, you would have drawn out.
But again, oh yeah, definitely.
And I will say the other side of the board, it feels real bad when you're like, well, at least the heat's off, like they're out of power cards. Like, just kidding. Like, my hand is almost full again. Right. So I mean, that's a hard one to put math to per se, other than to keep an eye on it. And the decks that are more at risk of it are the ones that are sitting at 20 and the ones that may be burning actions to draw power cards.
A friend that I have here in Albuquerque, Chris Pepe, who's very good at this kind of thing. When we were talking about this when the game first came out, he came to the conclusion that, like, really the only reason he could see to play above the 20 card limit is if you were consistently running out of cards. And I think that's a really solid argument for playing more than 20 cards. If your deck consistently draws itself out and you still want to draw more, then yeah, play more than 20.
That makes sense. Yeah. So start at your 20, and if you're finding again and again that you need more to keep you going all the way to the end, then inch up until you're not doing it anymore. I like that.
Yeah. And I think not with the Magor's deck that I have, but with when I was playing Eyes and I needed all those movement ploys, mm-hmm. I found myself when I would run out of movement ploys in a hand, I'd be like, oh man, now that I'm out of them, I feel like I'm much more vulnerable than I was because my whole strategy relied around being able to move. So once I didn't have that mobility anymore, I felt like I was no longer in the game as much. Mm. So I think in that deck, I think it had 22 cards because I couldn't decide how to cut it down. And I think that ended up being a good thing. So I think maybe it's really strategy dependent. Like, does it matter how many cards you have? Because if it's super important to your strategy that you have the cards just all the time, that maybe you just need a whole bunch.
Sure. All right. Well, here's another consideration I came up with. And this is one that I'm pretty guilty of. Like, this is kind of the reason I joked about playing 20 for a number of goofy reasons, but this is kind of why I drive myself down to 20 most of the time, is that getting beyond 20 can dilute your strategy, right? So we talked about, like, oh man, it's bad to get a bunch of upgrades. That's sort of a universally accepted thing. But what happens to me as I start increasing cards, then it's increasing the likelihood that I throw in some jank, right? Like, that's when Disturbing Presence starts sneaking in. That's when, you know, I start to think something crazy, like I could use one of these weird Grawl cards. So that is not necessarily an inherent risk in going higher, but it's something you have to watch for. Is like, hey, am I using this as an excuse to include cards that are not really any? Because it's one thing if you have 24 cards and they're all actively contributing to what you're trying to do. It's another if you have, you know, 20 cards and then 4 cards that are like, oh, this might be goofy or fun or something, which I'm definitely guilty of doing. So I think that's your other thing to make sure you're not doing if you're going above and beyond 20.
Definitely. And I kind of wonder, and this is a little bit of what I'm doing at the Magors, if you're just including cards that effectively do the same thing, but you just want more of it, that like cutting space for those cards doesn't necessarily make sense, because is it really hurtful to have more of them if it's just a duplicate of something else that's already in your deck? So I don't know.
Well, I was thinking about that, and maybe Steven's got some thoughts on this, but one example for me is that this Godsworn deck I was using this past weekend, I included both Ghoulish Pact and Spoils of Battle, which felt like a good call, but that was basically saying, it was saying 20% of my ploys were going to be committed, were only going to be useful probably in the first round, and that felt a little weird. So that would be an example of, like, let's say I was fighting for space. That's a double up that maybe I don't need to do. It might not be as important as doing that. And so if Ghoulish Pact was entering the mix to bump my deck up to 22, then, you know, then maybe that's an example of bloat that even doesn't necessarily identify as that right away, because you're like, oh, well, this is a thing I want to do. But the downside of it is perhaps too big.
Sure. Yeah. Justin, I'm going to butcher his last name, Lanahan, I think, from the Battlecast channel. When I played him at LVO, he was playing Regal Visions and Inspiration Strikes in his Mollig's deck, which mm-hmm. I think is super smart. Mm-hmm. But he was, you know, playing 20 cards. So he's seeing one or the other of those, like, 45% of games, I think, is the rough amount. If he were to go up to, say, 24 cards and keep both of those in, then he's only seeing it like 38% of the time on the first turn. So, you know, 6%, that's not, again, not a huge amount, but it can definitely add up over the course of a tournament where you play 8 to, you know, 14 games, depending on how well you do. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that doubling up on cards is an interesting thing that you can do in this game in what is basically a one-of game.
Right.
And it's drastically different in your power deck than it is in your objective deck. Like, doubling up objectives is just such a wild advantage to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how good it is in the power deck, but there are definitely decks that benefit from it. Mollugs being like the main one that I can think of. That Regal Visions is just a powerhouse in that deck.
Sure. Yeah,
definitely.
It's a real feel bad when you think you've got a handle on Mollug and then he inspires up in the middle of the round, you know, doing everything you can to not lay 3 wounds on him, and then he just does it anyway. So,
right. So I think it's kind of interesting. So you, Davey, you talked about like things that are effectively being used to inspire Godsworn, and then the cards for Mollug are effectively things to inspire Mollug.
Yeah.
The things I'm thinking about for Magors is like, add 1 dice to my next attack. I'm just going to throw it out there because every action, I need that. Like, any sort of improvement. And so I haven't looked at how many decks would like stuff like that and how many cards you could include like that, but I wonder if that kind of dilution is less impactful than what we were talking about for like the inspiration, because it doesn't really matter when I get +1 dice, I just want +1 dice all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Versus like, I'd like to get inspired before my normal inspiration kicks in.
Right. And you're talking in that case like +1 dice, that's +1 dice one time only. And that's assuming that in response, they don't do something that nullifies that. Not, right. You know, whereas Mollug getting inspired, I mean, it's +1 dice on his Whirling Club, which might be multiple attacks in that round. and it's, you know, that a bigger deal is obviously the back. So like that card is representing a benefit that he's going to get for the rest of the game. So if by doubling up he draws one of them early on, that's a game long, you know, unless he dies, there's a game long benefit that he's reaping from that doubling. So I think that's maybe part of why we're seeing you do it in this case and maybe not in this other case. Right.
Right.
Yeah. I think you could probably get pretty close to building your whole deck with just plus one to attack ploys if you really tried at it. There's just a ton of them, like circumstantial bonuses that in this case you get plus one to attack, in this case you get plus one to attack. So, I mean, that's an interesting thought on that. Like, that's never going to be bad.
Mm-hmm.
I think the question you ask yourself in that case is, like, is that the best I can get out of my card? Mm-hmm. And if it is, then by all means, just pound your deck full of them.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about moving through that deck a little faster. So, talking about specifically ploys, there's Duel of Wits, Trust to Luck, Improvisation, Skulls for the Skull Throne, which is a Reaver specific. They kill somebody, anybody, and they'll get two cards, or Magors to the Victor, the Spoils. Someone with three wounds, drawn three.
And I think an interesting point to make with Skulls for the Skull Throne versus to the Victor, the Spoils. Skulls for the Skull Throne is worded that you can draw up to two power cards, whereas to the Victor, the Spoils, you have to draw three. I don't know why you would ever not draw the full amount, yeah, but at least you have the option.
Right.
I don't know what the benefit is, but maybe there's a reason for it.
I guess there's a tiny bit of design space where you might, you know, score something if your opponent had gone through. I don't know. Like that's down the, that's speculation city. But Steven, you talked about Improvisation was like your favorite card. What to you makes it stand out above Duel of Wits or Trust of Luck?
So I like Duel of Wits. I used to play it in literally every deck that I put together. And then someone, I don't even remember who, mentioned that they liked Improvisation better. So I gave it a shot. And at least for the current iteration of decks that I'm building that all magically seem to coalesce around Tomes and Acolyte of the Cataphrane. I love Improvisation because, like, if I've got a hand full of junk, particularly third round, you know, I can pitch it guilt-free and with the sole hope of just picking up extra tomes. Mm-hmm. And then otherwise, it proves to be this, like, really useful card in mid-game where I run through my hand and need some more options. And it does, like you said, just kind of refills your hand. It feels really good when you ditch no cards to draw three.
Yeah, it effectively almost gives you, because you consider it a null card, you consider it almost like it says your power hand's going to be seven for this round. You're just not going to know what some of them are until a little bit later.
And I don't like Trust to Luck because it always represents a loss of cards.
Sure.
I can see playing it, I guess, in some situations if I had it in my deck, but I just don't see myself ever, like, building a deck with it in it because I'm losing cards when I play it.
Sure. The other thing that's cool about Improvisation is that you're not waiting on, I mean, almost every round somebody's going to play a power card, you know, play a ploy, and you get a chance to bounce back and duel with it. But if you're playing against somebody with a lot of spell gambits or something like that, like, you may not get a chance to trigger it until later than you'd like or something like that. So it is relying a little bit on your opponent to do something that they're almost certainly going to do, but still, you know, it's a factor to consider. I will say, and here's some, if you are somebody who's looked at Duel Wits and you have not been able to find reason to include it, for me, I when I originally looked at it, I had flawed thinking about it, where I looked at it and thought, well, if I include this is not a card that actually does anything for me, so it means I'm basically building a 20 card deck that is 9 ploys and 10 upgrades, and ploys are better than upgrades, so why would I reduce my ploys? But the problem with that line of thinking is that that's only true if you draw through your entire deck, right? Because that Duel of Wits is essentially representing, I mean, odds are it's going to be a ploy and an upgrade if you've drawn pretty evenly up to that point. So it's a placeholder for a ploy and an upgrade, or a placeholder, you know, could be more, could be less, whatever. But it's a placeholder for two more cards, and the imbalance doesn't matter unless you've drawn every card. And then, like we talked about, if you've drawn and played every card, you have hopefully built yourself quite an advantage along the way. So, having said that, I still find it difficult to find a ploy to cut for either of these, Duel of Wits or Improvisation. And I noticed that they don't necessarily show up in all the top decks, right? Like there's a lot of high level decks from some of the big writers like Jamie Giblin and John Reese that don't necessarily include these. And so I think it's interesting that they are the people when you use them, you're like, wow, this feels really powerful, and yet they still don't seem like an auto include for even some pretty high level players.
And I kind of wonder if some of that, again, is very strategy dependent. Like, certain decks just don't really need it. You know, like, they like the ploys they have, but they may not care about them as much. I'm thinking specifically about, like, Curse Breakers. Yeah, there's some really strong ploys for Curse Breakers, but they're pretty solid that if you didn't happen to draw one or two of them in a game, it probably didn't impact your game all that much.
Yeah, it could be.
Whereas if you're relying on something like, I don't know, what's a good example?
Cataphrine tomes, I'm telling you.
Sure, yeah. If you need those tomes and you're not getting them when you want them, you've bottom decked four of them or something. Like,
right. Actually, I think that's a perfect example, Stephen, right? Because like if you're late game, and you're drawn through them, like everyone you draw is representing another glory, basically, right?
Yeah.
Like,
and in my decks, and I hope in most people who are playing Shadespire, you don't want a mulligan, right? Like that's right. A sign that things are going bad. So there's going to be five cards that you don't see unless you do something to see them.
Yeah.
And in terms of tomes, like, yeah, that's points you don't score. So that's really where I started playing improvisation. And I may move away from it if I stop playing tomes, but right now I just can't give up the thought of scoring 5 points in the end of the game for doing almost nothing.
Sure. Actually, that makes more sense, because I remember reading your report and you were talking about, you know, you regularly scoring 4 or 5 and only once scoring 3 because you'd had to chuck some stuff. And I was like, man, I don't know. I did not put it together how crucial improv was to making that happen. Talking about cataphranes, that there's just a couple of upgrades right now that will help you draw through your deck or access your deck otherwise. So one of those being, we'll get back to Cataphrine Relics in a sec, but Bag of Tricks. And this is, I got to confess, not a card I've put in yet, mostly because I've been trying other stuff out. An action to draw, to search a deck and draw a card. And everyone has been eagerly anticipating the, they call it a tutor effect, right, from Magic or whatever other game. So when you talk about, because you can already take an action to draw a card, this is an action to draw a specific card and reach through. I don't know if you're including this, if it has any impact on the size of a power deck that you bring, because if you say, oh, I've got a bigger deck, then I'll just use Bag of Tricks to get what I need. We still got to draw a Bag of Tricks to do it. So you got any thoughts on this one, Steven?
So I played Bag of Tricks at LVO, and I pretty early on realized that it wasn't for my deck. I think it's extremely powerful in certain decks. But in terms of like building your deck over 20 cards, I think most people who do that are trying to squeeze in extra ploys, not extra upgrades. Mm-hmm. So you certainly can't go wrong with making the extra upgrade you have to put in for balance be Bag of Tricks if you're going to go to 22.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Hadn't thought about that. That's a good option.
I like the card a lot. I could not find the time to use it in Goblins because I had to spend so many actions doing weird stuff in order to score my objectives, which is how I play Goblins. Like, my Goblins are doing all kinds of dumb stuff in order to just score objectives. It's not necessarily to kill anybody or do anything like that.
Yeah,
and when I had to use all those actions to do that, I just didn't have time to use the action to search. But I think in decks like Molag, in particular, big surprise, It's really good. I think in Curse Breakers and other small armies, where you have actions or activations in excess of your number of models, I think it's really good.
Sure. Yeah. I think decks that get a lot of mileage out of a particular ploy. So if you're, I don't know, like, Forest Riders who are leveraging, Shardgale. That's the one.
Yeah.
That's worth digging for. Right. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. It's a real powerful card. I think that it's been designed well in that an action is a pretty high price to pay sometimes, right? So, I mean, it feels...
Yeah, and don't forget it also charges the guy it's on.
Sure,
so.
Exactly. So they appropriately identified that it was a very powerful thing that needed a pretty heavy cost to be able to use. The other upgrades that let you draw extra card or Cat of Rain relics, and this was back in the day when these were terrorizing the meta. This was, I think this is one of the fundamental things that made them work, was the fact that when you had enough of them on somebody, you'd start drawing cards as soon as they took an action, which is the only way you're going to get through your deck fast enough to see the other relics to put them on to get to your spot where you're getting the four glory, right?
Yeah.
Which made me, you know, periodically makes me think like, oh, you know, what if you, I don't know. I think that was like the stealth. When people first looked at it, like, how am I getting all six of these on? And I think that's what, you know, on first glance was maybe not as easily noticed. You know, you notice the four glory gain at the end. Maybe you take note of the combat stuff. I think that was overlooked, certainly by me. Obviously, I can't speak for everybody. But I think that was the people who recognized the value of that were the ones who were able to turn it on the soonest. And I mean, and the rest is history, right? So,
yeah. Yeah. Put it to bed once and for all. Once they figured it out.
Yeah.
Except it's, that it's back.
It's out there. Yeah. Somebody's. Do you see anyone floating around playing that in your area, Stephen?
I haven't. We've had discussions about it, and we just keep coming up with it. It's just too hard. but I mean, Godsworn has three ploys that let him play a free, free upgrade.
They can get
Eyes of the Nine has a little dude that can't die as long as your leader's alive.
Yeah,
there's options.
It'd be fun to play around with. Gosh, Godsworn though gives me the sweats having like a person on like three. I guess you could have somebody with three wounds and two. Yeah, all the guys who get two dodge are two wound dudes. Yeah, so much fragility. Yeah. You would have to like have nerves of absolute steel to run that. So
I think
I know what I'm talking about. Akon. No.
I think what I've seen with the people who are running it, they're running ghosts mostly, and they stack both. Deathly Fortitude and Sudden Growth on the person who's getting them. Mm. So they've got plus four wounds. And I don't know, other stuff to keep them alive, like Tainted Vitality and Healing Potion.
Yeah.
Sure. So it's like whoever you put it on is probably not going to die because they're going to be sitting at least seven wounds.
Yeah. They can sudden appearance away for safety if they need to, or run through a wall or something like that. Yeah, I guess. I've heard the same thing that it's ghosts doing it. I haven't seen it in action. I'd be curious.
If I could put forward a humble suggestion of Snurk, it might also be a good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you might be able to play some kind of wild jank out of Molog where you put the upgrades on the bat squig.
Oh, sure, yeah. With his three dodge when he's inspired.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know. It seems bad, but the drawing two off every action, I think you're right, was kind of overlooked, but that's real strong.
Right. Well, and Snurk, because you've identified Snurk and Batsquig, giving them rerolls on their defensive thing when they're already rolling so many dice is pretty powerful. And Snurk can just keep taking actions. He just keeps spinning all over the place. You know, other people like I moved, so I can't now. Hopefully, I'm close enough to attack to get another action out of it. But yeah, that's it.
Sounds
that's
like we've one. Got a new episode topic on our hands.
Yeah, I think that's about all the words that need to be expended on that idea, honestly. But I say that and now. I'm going to be thinking about it for the rest of the evening. So. All right. Well, that kind of covers most of what we want to touch. Does anyone have anything they want to hit on the topic of picking what size to make your power deck? I think our too long didn't read is a characteristic thing, which I appreciate on Call of Shadespire, is that there's a lot of reasons to keep it at 20. You may have specific reasons to increase to 22 or 24, but when in doubt, 20. I don't know, is that how you feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, for me at least it is. I think there are legitimate reasons for people to increase above 20. I think there's some really bad reasons that people do it too.
And
I keep hearing this argument of like, oh, my opponent won't know what to expect if my deck is really
neither
big.
Neither will you.
They're going to expect you. That's
you won't draw what you need.
But no, there are legit reasons to do it. I don't tend to play those kinds of decks, so I don't feel like I'll be doing it anytime soon. But maybe they'll introduce some incentives to do it, like some other games have, like Magic with Battle of Wits or something like that. If I could share one more thing, I did some prep for the show math wise, and don't want it to go to waste.
Oh, please do.
The other thing that concerns me about going over 20 is, you know, everybody thinks about like, what are the chances of me drawing X card in my first hand? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're pretty reasonably close, up to like 24 cards. You only lose like 4.5% or something like that chance of doing that. But again, where I found that the math really started to hurt you was if you mulligan a hand trying to look for something specific. Like when I first started the game, I would mulligan in orcs to look for Shard Gale.
Okay, yeah.
And if you didn't get that in your first hand and then you mulligan, so in a 20 card deck, your next three cards, you have like a 20% chance of drawing that card, right? Mm-hmm. That just happens to be a benchmark that I used when I was doing calculations. Or if you don't mulligan and, you know, you draw extra cards hoping to draw something, your next three cards, you have a 20% chance of drawing that X card that you need. If you go up to 24 cards, your next three cards, you only have a 15% chance. Mm. And so again, I think where I struggle with the bigger deck is not that it makes you less likely to get a good hand, but in those times when you inevitably get a bad hand, man, it makes it hard to come back.
Right. Yeah.
And that's really where I'm at with it. I don't ever try to argue with people that they can't do well with a bigger deck. You absolutely can. I think that it just is such a feel bad moment for me.
Yeah.
To get multiple bad hands in a row that I don't think I'll ever do it.
So what I like about that last point especially is that it's almost counterintuitive, where you're saying if I'm somebody who is willing to mulligan aggressively, then I'm more likely to run out of cards. So then I probably want to have extra cards in the deck. But by putting extra cards in the deck, you're making that aggressive mulligan that you're doing, you're making it that much less effective. Like that's where it sounds like the math really comes around to bite you, is
yeah.
And so counterintuitively, you know, if you're more aggressive about mulliganing, you may want to think harder about keeping yourself at 20. Obviously, deck and strategy dependent, but
that's actually my least favorite argument for going over 20 is when people will say, well, I'll pack it with a bunch of cards, but I'll aggressively mulligan so that I get what I want. And that's why, is because, you know, as you pack your deck higher with more cards, your mulligans become less effective, not more effective.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we've covered. Phil, you got anything else to throw in there?
No, I think that all sounds really good. There's some stuff here that I hadn't thought about before, so I'm probably going to go and start poring over the deck builders right after this.
Well, so on our way out, as always, we will tell you, go ahead and get in touch with us at WTHcast or whatthehexcast@gmail.com. Next episode, theoretically, we're going to cover what I've learned about the God's Sworn Hunt. and it is that they are hard work but fun. That's your TLDR. If you want to get look at the rest of the Mortal Realms content, you can go to www.themortalrealms.com. If you want to do /underworlds, you can get Aaron's comprehensive list of promos. Obviously, Stephen Van has been awesome to have on here for this. Stephen, you're, well, I would just tell people call it Shadespire, right? You got, is that correct? Just call it Shadespire.com?
Call it Shadespire.com, yep. Okay. And it has a little, like, comment on post function. I check that all the time.
Awesome. So. Anywhere else you'd like people to get in touch with you, or is that the spot? Go find you there.
So I am pretty active on the Warhammer Underworlds community forum on Facebook, mm-hmm. Under my own name, Stephen Van. I do have a Twitter, but I keep it secret. So
yeah, keep it secret, keep it safe.
Yeah, exactly. I think either the commenter on Call It Shadespire or through the Warhammer Underworlds community, I've actually really enjoyed that community a lot more than some of the other gaming communities I've been in.
Yeah.
Seems to be much more positive in general.
Yeah. All right. Well, awesome. If you're out there and you like what you heard, go ahead and give us a review. Keep meaning to do this, but a special thanks to awesome names, Rua Colony, Taco Bell Yum, and then Battle for Salvation dropped us a kind line on there. That helps us out, is getting out to more people. And that about covers it. Big thanks to Stephen. I think you kicked it up for us on this episode. We would have been still fumbling around with the hyper geometric calculator and making math errors that probably would have had you ripping your hair out if you were listening out there. So
no, I appreciate you guys having me on. I don't know how I got into the position of like speaking as somewhat of an authority, but it's kind of cool. So I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, it's that blog, man. You write with when you're writing stuff that people are excited to read, they want to hear more. So we'll say thanks to y'all, and we'll see you later. For What the Heck's, I've been Davey.
This is Phil.
And I'm Steven.
Yeah. Oh, man. I gotta go and change my desk again.
Go fix all that trash.
I don't know how to hang up.